Blog Talk Radio.
And Blog Talk Radio is hating me tonight, evidently. I can't get on the board. I can't get Blaine in here. I am still trying. It's been 15 minutes. But I'm hopeful. But it doesn't want to let me in the studio. I was in the studio earlier, but the lights didn't come on and I couldn't see our callers. So I am just continuing to try. I know Mercury is retrograde, and that's got a lot to do with it, I suppose. I've had trouble with Blog Talk before, but never like this. So I can't even play any music while I keep trying. And I can't even email them for help because that page won't come up either. Oh, telling you, if you don't know what Mercury retrograde is, give it a look. You really should know. Golly. Okay, let's keep. My fingers are going to give out on typing the same thing. Okay, let's see here. Trying to get back into the studio. I got to the show page. And clicked on studio, and now I can't get into the studio. And I tried it for our other radio station, and it was the same. I couldn't get on. So, Ah. Well, and here we are, and I do not have a guest. Maybe he got tired of waiting. I don't know. Well, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Hello, Blaine.
Hello, how are you?
Mercury retrograde has kicked my butt just when I was saying that it was being good to me. That was my mistake.
Okay.
Oh, it's so good to have you here. Sorry.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Wait and go through me trying to get on here. But here we are. So I'll give it over to you now.
Wonderful. Well, my name is Raymond Blaine, and I'm speaking on Palestine today. I'm hoping to do this every other week and kind of let people know what I'm researching about Palestine. This isn't my thoughts. This is thoughts from the world and also thoughts from actual people on the ground in Palestine. My project is to read letters of children in Palestine and just let them kind of give them a sounding board to tell us what their feelings and things are going on over in Palestine.
And they have a lot to say, don't they?
Yeah, they do, actually. They have lots, and I have some letters. And I want to say hello to any of the educators in Palestine and also to all the kids that are getting involved with this. I want to start off by thanking Maysam Abimur for helping me get this off the ground, along with Zane Arias as well. I also want to let you guys know that I will be reading two letters today, but that because I'm doing this every other week, I will get to the other letters as time permits. Okay. Well, today I read in Press TV on that the World Tribune quoted an unnamed Israeli official saying Obama has made it clear that he wants Netanyahu to do something about the problems there, and he's looking for concrete answers, and also this is not looking for a photo op. He's in the business of doing something for the Palestinian state, and it's they're basically the implication is that if Israel won't give him something he can work with, then he's going to act on his own, which I don't really know what that means, but hey, a little bit of hope maybe. So we'll just go with that, and we'll follow that and see how that goes. I have a lot of hunger strikers on a hunger strike their detention is illegal, and so they're trying to find ways to peacefully protest their detention as well. Okay, so I'm going to start off by reading a letter from Maysam, and she has a blog called almostcelestial.blog.org if anybody wants to go and read any more of her stuff. She has some pretty good things on there, and she's updating her blog pretty regularly, so you'll be able to read a lot of stuff on her blog. And again, that's almostcelestial.blog.org. So her letter starts off with the young visions of peace. Peace is not a dream. It is hard work, and there's nothing naive, glamorous, or simplistic about it. Well, you can agree or not, depending on who you are, where you are, or what kind of experience you've had about conflict and peace, if any. Some do not have to deal with peace and conflict at all, because a peaceful life is what they have always had. However, the term peace can mean a whole different thing for a young Palestinian who lived his or her whole life suffering from the lack of it. Peace can even turn into a taboo if combined with Israel. The small state of Israel, which is the regional military superpower, occupies Palestine in the language of the UN, cutting through the Palestinian territories. The Palestinian conflict with Israel is the world's major source of instability and any peace in the region, and must be established and built upon a solid ground. She goes on to say she's interviewing a couple of people. So this is Rola. When the 20-year-old Rola was asked about what both sides should do to establish a profound peace, she immediately said, "We first need to bring justice into existence before thinking about establishing peace." I asked her what kind of justice she was talking about. She stared, talking about a number of steps that should be taken to do it. Respecting international law and implementing all UN resolutions, including removing all illegal settlements from the Palestinian territories assigned by the UN. Releasing all political detainees, canceling what is called administrative detention, and start treating Palestinian detainees like humans. Respecting ceasefire agreements and lifting of all movement and economic restrictions imposed on Palestinians, especially in the Gaza Strip. Then she goes on to interview a 26-year-old law student named Ahmad, who says, there's nothing called Israel. Israel means occupation, and occupation means more destruction, more death. His vision of peace is one Palestine, where Muslims, Christians, and Jews live together side by side in one country, helping each other and the world to become a better place. When, on the other hand, Abir, the 23-year-old, said that peace can only be when we have the ability to forgive and forget. Mm-hmm. I've lost my best friend who I knew since kindergarten in last November assault on Gaza. It's like someone suddenly slapped you in the face, or like you lost part of your own body. If peace would make this entire stop, then peace shall prevail. She goes on to say, according to what I've lived by since my early childhood, I thought that Israel can only survive by my death. I had lots and lots of despair moments when I saw the whole world thinking that I was the oppressor. Can't they see? I repeatedly asked myself, how in the world can this small country, with no proper military force or infrastructure or anything necessary for decent human life, be a threat for one of the biggest military powers in the world? I'm often shocked by the attitude and responses of those who took peace for granted, accusing me as a Palestinian to being the victimizer. I'm not saying we've always handled the situation perfectly and we never made mistakes. But what do you expect from a helpless human being being treated like less than an animal and denied from the simplest right of even recognition? Still, do I think the Israelis should suffer like my own people? Absolutely not. No one should suffer at all. That's why I want everybody to know. No one should be deemed such a life of misery and deprivation. And that was...
That shows such grace.
Yeah, and then she continues on, as I grew older and had access to the internet, I saw, for my surprise, that many young Israelis do not wish me dead. They wanted us too to live in peace and abhorred the way their government treated us. What image of peace which would work for both sides can be very deeply debated, and we might not reach an agreement. However, I believe in what young people from both sides can do to make it happen. I believe that any peace should be built on mutual respect and recognition. Both sides should openly respect the other side's right to exist and live in dignity like human beings. They both should recognize each other's agonies and hopes for future and construct a peace which contributes not only to the good of the region, but the good of the world. So, she's not even angry at the Israelis. She just wants peace,
There's no bitterness.
None.
They amaze me.
Yeah, well, she's awesome. Okay, so Zane writes, he's a 16-year-old, he lives in Gaza, he's one of my star guys, he's helping me put this together and recruiting kids to help write and all kinds of stuff, and he's been a real big help in this project, so I just want to read his letter. The Palestinian people living in Gaza are always hoping for a better future. They depend on hope in every single part of their lives to accomplish their goals and to make their beloved ones happy. But with the spontaneous Israeli acts, these hopes will be limited, as well as Palestinians in Gaza are not sure about their beloved ones and their own lives.
Mm.
After the last Israeli attacks on Gaza, people returned to their normal life. Although there is no facilities, Gaza people tried their best to rebuild or to make things that were completely destroyed inhabitable and make Gaza a better place. As a teenager living in Gaza, I'm trying my best to enjoy my life as other teenagers around the world. But there are a lot of problems here. The most important problem is electricity. Electricity is on just for 8 hours in every house. So you need to do everything you have to do in these 8 hours because not all the families have electrical engines. And even if they have electrical engines, there are continuing fuel shortages and a very bad siege on Gaza by Israel. Another problem is medical supplies, the shortage of medicine, and the most dangerous thing is the effects of the weapons Israel used in its cruel attacks on Gaza. When we really feel happy, we see the pains and the suffering in the eyes of those who have lost everything, their houses, their children, their fathers, and many others. People here keep on and try as much as they can to enjoy their lives, to accomplish their dreams, and to protect and save their children and make their dreams true. With all of these people that there will be a new, but all these people know that there will be a new Israeli attack on Gaza because we've tried so many times before. So many times, and every time they penetrate the promises of the ceasefires, and people are not able to forget their grandfathers who are massacred and forced to leave their lands, and we cannot forget the Palestinian refugees with their horrible lives. The main problem that the world keeps believing that Israel lies, and Israel, as usual, is reasoning its actions. This doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm sorry, I didn't edit this. As they are terrorists and they are defending themselves, the whole world must wake up because justice will take place one day. So basically, he's just saying that, you know, you try to live a happy life, and even if you haven't lost a loved one, you surely have a friend or a family member that knows someone that's lost someone.
Right.
So
Gaza's not that big, so
no,
everybody knows everybody. I mean,
for the most part, yeah.
For the most part, not literally, because it's like what, 1 million.
There's 1.8 million people in Gaza. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the majority of them are children.
Yeah.
About, I think, over half are children under the age of 15. So that's definitely something that's going on. How much time do I have?
Let me figure, because you've got 5 more minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see.
Yeah, because I'm just apologizing to everybody that I couldn't get on. It's one of the foibles of Blog Talk. And then
sure. That's okay.
What did we know?
Okay, well, so I have one more from Ranim Sakwa. She's 16-year-old, lives in Gaza. I don't know. Okay, it may be an unusual thing in many places in the world, but for me here in Gaza, it's a very good thing to live a while without bombing and hearing airplanes all over the skies. I can't call it a regular way of life because we still face some problems here in Gaza. One of the very disturbing problems is electricity. For many years now, we have been facing electricity problems in Gaza due to the lack of fuel, which the electricity company faces due to the closing of the borders. During my week, I spend my days going to school, which I enjoy with friends and teachers. And during my weekend, I will probably go out with friends to certain places. I can't say that I have no fear in my heart, because in any moment, another war might begin.
Oh.
Here in Gaza, a lot of families can never feel complete joy because they lost their loved ones. Children lose their sisters, brothers, and even their parents. Wars here do not differentiate between men and women, elders and children. The Israeli rockets might attack anyone. A lot of people here in Gaza have a lot of men and their families in the Israeli prisons, which they can never visit. And a lot of prisoners went on hunger strikes because they are not even receiving the rights of regular prisoners. Other people may be enjoying their lives, but deep inside they feel sorrow to all those children who lost their families and all those mothers that wait for the day their sons might come out of the Israeli prisons. Although we try to be happy and enjoy our lives, we'll never have full happiness unless we stop seeing those Palestinian families with their hearts full of sorrow over their family members that they were killed during the war in 2008 and 2012, and that are being killed every day, not only in Gaza, but also all over Palestine.
Yeah.
So these, basically, they're all saying kind of the same thing. You know,
they
live normal lives, but as normal as they can be, and are basically a giant prison.
Well, and when you hear that those drones all the time, I mean, they've told me about trying to study, and, you know, you just hear that noise all the time, depending on what part of Gaza you're in.
Yeah, it's like a lawnmower engine over your building is the way it was explained to me.
Yeah. Well, and then if it's not the drone, then somebody's got a generator going, if they have the fuel, and the generators are dangerous, and they're always blowing up and doing things. So.
Well, that, and they also use leaded fuel.
Yeah.
And so where the people that's affecting most are the small children, because leaded fuel, the exhaust from leaded fuel gets into the air, and then lead drops down onto the ground, and then the dust picks it up, and then the little kids breathe it. And so they're going to have problems with that and learning disabilities and anything that has to do with lead exposure, as we know lead exposure is bad, and it's been banned in our country.
I mean, and that's, I mean, you can't get any more... of an exposure than that.
I mean,
no, it's like just putting, you might as well just suck on the exhaust pipe of the generator. It's just everywhere.
Yeah.
So, and then once the lead is on the ground, it doesn't go away. It just kicks up and blows to different places, you know, from inside the houses to outside on the streets. But the ones that are most vulnerable are the small children because they're so close to the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, they make,
or they're playing in the dirt, or they're, you know, they're being kids, you know.
Kids always play in the dirt. I mean, you can't stop that. That's, Well,
but they would probably have to think more about it. I don't think I want my kid playing in that dirt because it's probably contaminated.
Right. So you try to keep the kid in the house or keep him over in the rock bed where they're going to fall and hurt themselves. I don't know how they can do it and remain as gracious and as hopeful as they do.
They're wonderful people. They have the best heart and they have the biggest. They have all the hope in the world, and I don't know. I'd have a hard time with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a friend of mine who is an Israeli who lives in this country, very pro-Palestinian, was talking to one of her people back there in Israel, and he said that because he's an Israeli activist for Palestine, you know, I mean, those are the unsung heroes.
Right. They're about 50% in Israel, but believe it or not,
that are pro. They may not be real loud about it, but some are. But he was telling her that it really depends a lot on the United States, that those of us who are active really need to keep it up.
Yes. Yes.
So,
but I also believe that it's, to say something about that, I believe that the only way we're going to have changes if it changes from inside Israel.
I believe that. I think he was meaning more just like, well, world opinion has to come from.
Right. From the U.S. and from Britain.
We have to do what we can do. But no, definitely, they're going to have to do something there. Which isn't the thing to do, but I couldn't help but be tickled. You know, I'm not one for destruction, but you know, Sunday they started the apartheid buses.
Yes.
Yeah, and within a few hours the buses got torched, and
yeah.
One of my Israeli friends said that they were pretty sure that it was done by Israeli activists who just, you know, said this apartheid is wrong.
Right. So, and I don't know how much I like that either. You know, these people are just trying to get to work, and whatever they can do to get to work and not be harassed is good. But at the same time, you know, where do you draw the line?
See, that's it. That's where, like, okay, when you destroy something, how, you have to play it off. Is it going to destroy, you know, but no, because they're going to make sure they get to work because, you know, it's the labor force. But, it was just some of the squatters didn't want to ride the bus with
Palestinians. Well, they kick them off the bus and make them walk. I mean, they'll call the police, and the police will come, and they never even hear the Palestinian side. They just kick them off because they're Arab.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's no talking to them. There's no arguing with them. There's nothing. It's you're getting off this bus, and you're walking the rest of the way home, and that could be miles. You never know how long. And also past settlements. Through checkpoints and through all this other stuff where they're, you know, they risk being injured or, you know, killed even.
Right.
So I imagine that's very scary to be dropped off in the middle of the desert, you know, and you're like, and knowing that you got
to
go through all these places where all these settlers live.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Now that's where Gaza, you see that there's, you know, there's sort of a trade-off. I think I personally would rather live in Gaza, even though they're apt to be, you know, you can't go near the water because they're going to shoot you and you know.
Right.
That kind of thing, but there you aren't living with people who hate you because Gaza is a prison. It's a concentration camp.
Right, right.
And
but Gaza has its own problems with the different factions, too, and that makes it not all that great either. So, you know, the average Palestinian, no matter where they live, is living a life of chaos.
Well, chaos, wherever, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a trade-off thing, but the people in the West Bank, they're beat to death and chased and have the dogs turned on them, but they don't have the bombs and the drones. So,
right.
You know, whatever.
Well, yet. I mean, if they have another uprising,
that'll
probably happen again. But I'm really hoping that there's not another one.
Yeah.
But I did read a post that you posted about the different violations of the ceasefire that Israel's done, which has been over 100 since November, if anybody's not keeping score.
Yeah, when the ceasefire started, it only started if you were Palestinian and not Palestinian.
Right. Are you there? Are you there? Are you still there? Just dropped me. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Hello? 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 Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Okay. Oh.
Did you get me again?
I've got you. Yeah, I got dumped.
Okay,
so,
no problem.
Anyway, you'll be back next Wednesday
yes.
for the Rachel Corey special.
Yes, and I will do some readings out of her book, the Rachel Corey book, and some of the poems that she wrote.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Thanks,
thank you so much for having me on. I'm sorry we had
patience.
So many technical difficulties, but we'll work on that.
Well, Blog Talk will, it will get better. Yeah. So,
it will
thank
get better.
You.
Thank you, Ruth. And
okay.
All right. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
In solidarity. Bye-bye.
In solidarity, Blaine. Yes. So 760, hello.
Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hi. You've been following the Blog Talk Hell tonight.
This is to be expected. Every time we do a controversial subject, stuff like
exactly.
this always happens.
Something happens. Rick is
it does.
Yeah, I just entered the chat. Hopefully you can hear me now.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, because actually, this last was a cross between. I think it was mostly Skype that dropped me. First, Blog Talk wouldn't let me on, then Skype conspired with them. Anyway, we're all on now. So tonight we're talking about 9/11 and a little bit of the old and some of the new findings. And I want to ask, first I want to say, Cynthia Hamill, you can find her at HTTP, on and on, artsygirl.hubpages.com. And Rick Wilson is on Facebook at Scream the News. So I wanted to ask both of you how you got interested in the whole 9/11 official lies.
Rick, do you want to go first?
Sure. Basically, it was about 2004, and, believing the official is true, I had a friend that forwarded me a video on YouTube. It was called Loose Change.
Mm.
And I watched it, and of course, within the first few minutes, the information.
The phone line's beeping in and out. I don't know, Rick, if you can hear that or not.
Yeah, I can hear it. I was just going to ask if it was just me, or you're getting it too.
I'm getting it too, yeah.
And I'm not getting it from you, then. Rick, talk to us some more. See if
I'm sorry. Am I getting feedback or something?
No. It was just like it would go click, 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 and we couldn't hear words you were saying.
Oh, the same thing happened to me when you were talking about Cynthia's site. So I don't know if there's interruptions of people coming on the line or not. Yeah, so when I was presented this information, it was, you know, I immediately said, it's impossible, there's no way, our government can never do this, or, you know, there's many theories out there. But it was watching that video that kind of woke me up once I allowed myself to just look at the information, honestly.
That was me. I kept my head stuck up my butt for way too long. But Cynthia, how did you come to doubt the official story?
Well, the building of the World Trade Center happened to be one of my very, very favorite buildings when I was a grad student in New York City. And Windows of the World was my absolute favorite playground, the very place that I celebrated my graduation night from my master's program. So I had kind of like this love affair with those buildings and that view up there. So the day that 9/11 happened, I mean, this was like major for me because I got kind of an intuitive hit immediately when this happened and when I first saw it on the television of King Kong fighting off jets on top of the Empire State Building. So, you know, I'm kind of one of these weird, I guess, lucky kind of weird people that I get my intuitive hits like very comical, and sometimes they just don't make sense, but they do if you like really read into it and you see later like, what was this King Kong thing about? Well, this whole King Kong thing was trying to tell me in my subconscious that this whole thing was a staged event. There's more to the story than what we're seeing on TV. So that was my first impression, and it was like this haunting thing that never let me go. And although I couldn't prove what I was seeing until I saw Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth later, like about 6 years later, I was going through this trauma where I had, you know, survived a dog bite incident, and it was like creeping at my hand, and, you know, my finger looked like it, actually it was my thumb, it looked like it was going to have to be amputated, and I was going through this whole thing thinking, this is my last moments on Earth. So my first thing that I wanted to do was Google and find out what the heck happened with 9/11. Because I thought I was feeling like I had limited time and this was it. I needed to find out now exactly what happened with 9/11. So that's when I went into the rabbit hole on 9/11, searching and looking up all this stuff, and happened to stumble across Richard Gage's work with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And his group at that point had 800 people aboard that were all questioning 9/11 and how those buildings fell. And they were all on board to have a new investigation. So that's how I came into this whole thing. I was like, man, this doesn't make sense. This is haunting me. I can't sleep. And sure enough, a lot of other people were feeling the same exact way. So that's how I came into it.
Well, how has it affected your lives, both of you, like with your family and all? Because neither of you keep it quiet, your feelings. And I just wonder how, you know, how your family has taken to it.
Well, I'd like to say that I'm obviously very vocal, so you picked up on that. Great detective work there. Yeah, if you see my my Facebook pages
and
so
forth. But you know,
I know the dangers with that, of course, with being ridiculed and
you know,
called a conspiracy nut and all that.
And
I've gone through it with my family as well. My closest friends, my loved ones, where, you know, when you bring this up, I think it's easier nowadays to sort of put that information out there because of social network sites and so forth, where people see the information in different ways, which is a great thing. But back when I was first going through it, especially, and somewhat continuously through today, you know, you're going to get backlash for vocalizing things regarding 9/11. And it's not an easy thing to go through, trust me. So when people, you know, you'll all hear things of, you know, you're unpatriotic, or you don't care about this country, why don't you move? When they don't realize I'm very patriotic and I love this country, doesn't mean I have to like my government or just look at facts.
That's true. I mean, well, and like one of the founding fathers talked about, you know, patriotism. I I mean, that means going ahead and accepting what, not accepting, but realizing what's going on and trying to change it. If your government's messing up, well, you the patriotic thing to do is to change it.
Well, of course, but that's never an easy venture, as
right,
our
right.
Founding fathers,
I mean,
alluded to as well.
Talk about not being, you know, patriotic. It's like, no, you don't understand.
And that's something I wanted to kind of touch upon tonight, too, is, you know, letting people out there know that they're not alone. I mean, I get a lot of private messages, phone calls, texts, emails, and so forth, a lot of interaction from friends and friends of friends, and they'll range all across society, you know, lawyers, policemen, you name it, some people that work for the government, saying, thank you for voicing this and for looking into this, because I'm not in a position where I can be as vocal about it. So they can kind of live vicariously through that. So just
right,
because,
right. And they'll, you know, send, they'll send you things to post also, right? Because they do
exactly.
That.
Exactly. I
yeah.
Do that all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So you know that you're doing good. And when people start calling your names and things, it's like, well, you know, that reflects on them, not you.
Well, that's
and
how
it,
I view it. I mean, because most of the time when people say, they get defensive and say, you're a conspiracy nut and you're just blah, 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 but they refuse to actually look at the facts. And that's, but that comes with
right.
The territory. We all know that's
mm-hmm.
what we're doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just part of it. But because you are vocal, have either of you, besides being called a conspiracy nut and unpatriotic, told to leave the country, have you ever, suffered anything else job-wise or relationship-wise?
Well, I didn't get a chance to tell my side of the story. I have a super ultra-conservative family with a long-standing business back in Texas from 1933. So,
oh, Jesus, I did not know.
Can you hear me? That
yeah.
Oh, okay. So when I first broached this subject with my mother, which my mother was sick at the time and probably had like about 8 months to live at the time that I finally came forward and actually shared with her my theories on 9/11 and the fact that I was questioning what happened and that I'd actually found proof with other people who were backing this up on the internet. She had a heart-to-heart talk with me and basically stated, Cynthia, this is kind of dangerous territory for you to be speaking out on this, and I would kind of appreciate it if you take your health into account here and that you don't speak up on this. And so she and I had that heart-to-heart, and basically I kept a lid on it for a complete 8 months until my mother passed away, and at that point I was just like, you know, Mom, I honored you, but now this is my life, this is my calling, there's something that's, you know, coming forth in me that's saying to speak up about this issue, whether it's something that's in alignment with you and the rest of the family, that's, you know, kind of a done deal at that point. I just felt like it was my duty as an American citizen and with my background in design and as an intuitive to speak up on behalf of what my intuition was telling me.
Right. Well, so now that was, I mean, when your mother had this talk with you, you knew that she was dying.
I did, and she had been sick before that, like about 2 to 3 years before that. I knew that she was, you know, kind of on her way out, so to speak, because she'd had a talk with me the last time I was in Abilene and had shared with me that she felt like this was the end of her life. So, you know, it was a conversation that we had. She was about 72 when we had that conversation, and she died about 73, 74. So.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. You might not have kept quiet if she was healthy and living away, but knowing that you were doing, but even while during that 8 months, did you know that once that she had passed that you would start speaking out, or did that just happen afterwards?
Well, I was going through a grieving process and had just been in a fairly major car wreck, and was kind of self-contained, where I was doing a lot of research at home on my computer and writing a lot. And I'm one of these busy people. I'm normally out doing a lot of stuff and doing design work and that type of stuff. So this was like an interim in my life where I was almost forced to sit still and actually look at this from a new perspective, and I started writing on it. And then when I was writing on it, I was like, you know, this is a story that needs to get out. So I committed to that and followed through and literally blogged all of the major videos that convinced me that this whole thing was a controlled demolition, and point by point by point, including pulling in President Bush's speeches and stuff, stating that we, you know, that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, the whole thing. So I didn't mess around. I tried to back my case as an attorney would if they were actually, you know, filling in a case to present to a courtroom. So that's how I wrote my argument. Although it's interspersed with a lot of personal stuff and kind of funny, I tried to lighten it up and make it funny to get through the article. But I tried to keep to the points of what convinced me to look at this and to realize this actually needs a new investigation, a very serious and a very thorough investigation.
Well, I wanted to ask you both what about the fact that other countries have had investigations into it? Isn't that appalling that I believe it's Malaysia or Indonesia and Canada, two that I know of offhand, have had investigations into it, but yet the United States only had the phony one?
Well, it seems that Cynthia actually has better information on that, but I would like to interject and kind of go back to what Cynthia was just alluding to, is to concentrate more on what is, you know, the easier things to present information-wise, because there's a lot of misinformation about 9/11. And one problem that I think that we all have, when all we're really asking for is a new investigation based on a lot of information that seems blatantly obvious. But then you get differing theories and sort of infighting with people, you know, with those theories stating that's a truth or it's not. When the whole core, and I'm glad she brought up, again, architects and engineers. So the website is ae911truth.org. That's a great start. These are seasoned veteran pilots, engineers, architects. It's a great place for people to start with valid information. World Trade Center 7. Hardly any of the public, you know, polls will show. If you can just ask around, how many towers fell? Two. No, it's actually three. No one's even aware of World Trade Center 7, and that was never even mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report. So there's obvious things like that that I think it's important for people to try to, if they're trying to grasp the whole encompassing effect of 9/11, is to look at those very basic, obvious, factual things that occur and stick with those instead of outside theories if you're trying to get that across.
Well, and then just the fact that the people who did the investigation, you know, loosely termed, some of them have come forward and they talked about what they weren't allowed to put in.
Yeah, they said that basically they were not given any sort of credible information from the FBI and CIA and so forth. So 6 of the 10 of those, of the 10 people on the 9/11 Commission, admit that it was sort of a scam. And if you look at how much money was invested in that investigation compared to other things, it becomes quite obvious that it was sort of a
What was it? I mean, just a small percentage, and usually then they talk about the millions that were spent on Bill Clinton and Monica.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I've seen that a couple times, you know, the comparison on, how much they spent to try to put him under because of her, and then how much they spent on this investigation. Like,
I might be exaggerating, but they spent more money investigating the residue on her sweater than they did on 9/11. Sorry if that's too
basically
crass, but,
yeah.
But that's the point. It's kind of disgusting how the money spent should be a red flag to people anyway. And then within a couple hours, Osama bin Laden. Everyone knew who did it.
Oh, immediately, yeah. And it's like the man had,
And one more thing I want to say along with that too. I'm sorry to Ruth, but most people don't know when you're pulling like the Iraq veterans that went in because of that, because you know the war was ready to go. So because of 9/11, we immediately went into Iraq and eventually Afghanistan. More than 50% of the troops thought Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. So there was a lot of misinformation, and so I just also want to say there's a lot of courageous, when you were talking earlier with Blaine about Palestinians and the Israeli ones who are protesting.
The activists, the pro-Palestinian
yes,
Israeli.
Kudos
yeah.
to them. I want to also give kudos to the Iraq veterans against the war. Speak out.
Yes.
People want to YouTube that. And it's not easy for anyone in the military that's there on the ground to give you information and speak out against, you know, fear of backlash and so forth. So I just want to mention that. But I think you made a great point of other countries besides the United States, and I think Cynthia has great information on that.
Yeah, the three main hearings that they've had, one was in Toronto, one was in Vancouver, and then the third was in Kuala Lumpur. So you're right. They all kind of avoided having anything to do with the United States. In fact, there have been other people that have spoken out even overseas, like in Sweden or Switzerland. There was a speaker who refused to come into the United States but actually did an internet-type podcast where he was able to freely speak within his own country without taking on some type of risk at the airport or something like that, a possible arrest.
Yeah,
so there are other people speaking out, too, on an international level. If you can hold a second, I'll pull that up. I've got it somewhere in my article. His name is, it's hard to pronounce, so let me look it up real quick. If y'all could talk about something else while I'm doing that.
Yeah, I'll interject while you're looking that up. I want to say on a personal level that I used to work for a travel agency, I'll just say it, Club Med. I got to go to the Caribbean a few times in Mexico and so forth. But what was interesting is with some of these places, there would be a lot of Europeans, Japanese, what have you, just a very eclectic group besides just Americans. And what I found was, and this is between 2005 and 2007, going to different areas beyond the United States, is that the United States and Americans were almost considered very
stupid.
Ignorant. Yeah. To put it, trying to sugarcoat that, but yeah, very ignorant, let's say, about not only 9/11, but the pride that we have and so forth.
Yeah.
And that's part of why we're not able to see or accept that what happened actually on 9/11.
Yeah. Well,
so
the
viewpoint of Americans is very different than when you're watching ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, they're all guilty.
We don't watch them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
well.
That you're given a certain sort of thing where Americans are number one in all this, and 9/11 is an official story, but the rest of the world definitely does not view it the same way we do.
Right. That the rest of the world knew immediately.
Most of them did.
Most
yeah.
of them, they did. They really did. They got it. And I'm embarrassed for my own stupidity.
They were actually being shown film clips that we were not privy to seeing, because when I pulled up the Asian films and what they were actually seeing, they were showing the explosive evidence of those buildings filmed from a completely different angle than what we were seeing on our national newscast, you know. So I was able to pull up that professor's name, and he's in Switzerland, and this is one of the best videos that I found for people who are researching and looking at 9/11 for the first time, to just kind of break into the whole story and the history behind why people are actually questioning this story. His name is Professor Daniel Daniele Ganser, Ganser. He's from Switzerland, and I've got his video and the article that I wrote on HubPages called 11 Years After 9/11, Breakthroughs in Understanding the Official Story. So this is one of the best videos that I found that actually shows the three separate theories of how 9/11 could have possibly evolved, because there's the let it happen, there's the, you know, there's the fact that, you know, someone may be hiding something and not completely telling the truth. So he's broken it down into like three separate analogies of how people can relate the basic history of 9/11 and how people can break it down and see there's only one out of these three that could possibly be true, but yet we've been told only one official story of 9/11. So this professor really brings up some key points, and for anyone who's really, really serious about delving into this topic, that's the guy you need to listen to. He's going to give you the most overall viewpoint, and it's one of the best hours that I've seen in footage on 9/11 out of everything that I've seen over an extensive 4.5-year study on this matter. So that's one of the first places I would go to actually look at.
Okay, you have that. You've got that link on Artsy Girl.
In the article, 11 years after 9/11, it's right in the middle of the article, Professor Daniel Ganser.
Okay.
I'd like to ask both of you a question at this point, too. It's something that I get questioned on. Okay, so 9/11 happened around, what, 12 years ago? Why is it important that we're talking about it now?
Some people want to
leave it in the past, so why do you 9/11 conspiracy theorists keep bringing this up? I'd like to understand your answer to that, because I have my own views on that, but I hear that.
I think it's important that people know the truth, and, I mean, just in general, but especially this, because so much of the war and the murders that we're doing around the world seems to stem from that, and the excuse that was given, well, like this was the terrorists, so immediately we're going to go murder, you know, millions of some people in Iraq. And like you said, Afghanistan, and now we've got drones, you know, in 6 or 7 countries that we know about. I think it all springs back from that. And so I think it's important that people understand just what happened, and also that they wake up and stop trusting this government, which has taken us from feeling that we were fairly free people to people who now, you know, are spied upon. Now there's some type of a thing they're fighting, because Obama has pretty much given himself the right to order killings of American citizens in our country.
Right, the NDAA.
I mean, and something, well, besides that, I mean, there's something new that's come up, even more, that they're trying to, some people are trying to squash before it really gets going. But, I mean, all of these things, that our rights being taken away and the spies and all, that plus the murder around the world, I mean, it all stems from that particular incident that I personally believe that people in governmental offices in our country knew about and allowed, whether they helped any other way or not. I think that where we are today, it all goes back to that. I don't know. Cynthia, what do you think?
Well, I definitely feel like you do. This was 9/11 provides the pretext for all of the overseas altercations that we've been involved in, which are basically wars, you know. So that's the primary thing. But then also looking back before 9/11, there was a whole PNAC agreement, the Project for a New American Century. And each one of you who are serious about 9/11 need to get on Google and Google PNAC, P-N-A-C, Project for a New American Century. Hey, guys, these people came up with this whole plan way over a year before 9/11, where they were looking for a new Pearl Harbor to instigate all of their Middle Eastern plans to go over there and do their imperialistic efforts. So this is a major deal, and, you know, a lot of people don't know this part about 9/11. They also don't know the fact that the Patriot Act bill was actually drawn up and written way the heck before 9/11 ever even happened.
Yeah.
And they passed it through like they had just written it 3 weeks after 9/11, where no one on Congress even read that thing. So, I mean, this whole thing was like this bogus, contrived thing that they created.
Oh, it's called flag, for sure.
Yeah, it's a whole, just, yeah, it's unbelievable what they've gotten away with.
Yeah.
And I'd like to add to that, too, with PNAC, again, P-N-A-C, that's very important. And also, if you're going to Google or YouTube that, there's a gentleman by the name of General Wesley Clark, who laid out, it's only just a two-minute video, of because of P-Nick and so forth, came across his desk. He's a decorated general, Pentagon, that laid out all the countries because of that, that we already knew
right.
that the U.S. was going to...
There were five, I think, that he mentioned, wasn't there?
No, there were actually seven.
There were seven,
I think. There were seven that were slated 10 days after 9/11 when he toured the Pentagon. And the importance of that, of course, is the fact that these countries, you know, basically had nothing to do with 9/11, but yet the Pentagon was already stating that these countries were going to be bombed within a five-year period. They're behind schedule, but
5 years,
this is what they were projecting.
Well, and they're pretty much on track, though.
Their timetable's a bit off because they were trying to get to those seven countries within 5 years. But the game's still on. They're still playing out this drama.
Yeah, that's just. But yeah, he came out. Yeah, I've seen the tape too. So this is not a surprise to so many people in the higher up offices. But I feel sorry for the people in the military now. But I'm starting to, you know. A few years ago, I'm saying, well, okay, fine. They really don't know. They don't understand. But now, with the internet and everything, and all the social media, I mean, I just can't believe that they're so gullible. I guess some of them still are, though. That think because I've had people tell me, well, if we don't go over there and fight for our freedom over there, you know, we're going to be taken over because everybody hates us. And, I mean, people, when they say that, they think they're being honest. I mean, they're sincere.
And that's,
and they
unfortunately
always talk,
a part of patriotism, I think, that's sort of indoctrinated into us as Americans, so that we are better than any other country. We are spreading democracy. Everyone should listen to us, and anyone else, anywhere else in the world except for where we are, is somehow less important as a human being.
Definitely second-class citizens. I mean, people here don't want to hear about all the children that are being killed elsewhere, but yet, and I'm not negating like Sandy Hook or something, but, you know, people just went crazy because 20 kids were killed.
That's what I mean. That's actually a great point, is because, look at Palestine. There's tons of countries where that sort of thing happens almost every couple of hours.
All the time.
What you're saying about the military, too, Ruthanna, is I just want to let you know that, I've talked with, military people, and it's the same thing where I bring that up, and they're like, yeah, I get it. But you'd be surprised. There are a lot, they're kids. They don't know any better, a lot of them.
Yeah.
They want to be patriotic, and I'm not putting them all down. There's many, many great ones, but they are kind of indoctrinated and fooled into joining, and they're told you're spreading freedom and democracy and so forth. And a lot of that stems from everything that's been done since 9/11. But they said, yes, you'd be surprised how many just don't get it, which is unfortunate. And then they come back and they have PTSD because they will tell you, no, what you see on CNN, what you see on ABC, what you see on the news is not the reality. I feel so guilty and horrible that my superior officer even rewarded some of us, like, instead of shooting an Iraqi, if we got to stab him instead and he died, we'd get rewarded. And how
we would shoot
innocent people and knocking down doors. But anyway, that all stems back to 9/11. Like you were saying, the PNAC thing was drafted before all those things were put in place. So looking at that, 9/11 is a huge part, I consider, in our modern-day history. And it'll be looked at 30 years from now, looking back how we did at, and people are going to backlash me for saying this, but the Nazis, what's the difference? We are kind of being the terrorists, and it's drawn out the exact same way. The Patriot Act is exactly identical to the Enabling Act, which was under Hitler. So,
right, including if you look at that movie, Loose Change, an American Coup, that movie is excellent. In the first 5 minutes, they basically lay out the whole parallel between Nazi Germany and the United States and how we've both done this imperialistic effort based on falsities. Like they had, you know, some type of fire in the Reichstag or whatever, however you pronounce
Reichstag,
that.
Reichstag, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm from Texas, so give me a break. Sometimes I get it. Sometimes it's way off base. But anyway, you know, they created this fire and then blamed this guy on this, and he had nothing to do with this. Well, this is the same thing that they did with the 9/11 thing, blaming this whole thing on bin Laden, which was basically trumped up. And if we look at Philip Marshall, and Philip Marshall, by the way, is the guy who wrote the book called The Big Bamboozle, and he was just killed with two children and the family dog. And if you read his book, you'll know why his life was at risk, because he basically spills the beans on a number of issues that happened within the United States, even as far back as the Iran-Contra thing, because he was one of the private pilots running the whole operation with the Iran-Contra issues. So he's got like a 20 to 25 year or whatever span there, you know, that links this whole thing together. It connects dots beyond dots beyond dots.
Oh, cool.
And it's profound, the information that he gives. But he also, on like page 75, 76 of that book, he goes into the details where it's very clear Bin Laden actually died in 2001, and this is reported from somebody who was on the inside of three separate presidents, you know.
Was this in December
things.
Of 2001?
I'm not sure the exact month, but let me see if I can find it in this book.
He was on dialysis, right?
Yes, but he supposedly, allegedly died of Marfan disease, which is Marfan syndrome, which is something, a genetic disorder of the connective tissue, which strengthens the body structures, including the skeletal system, cardiovascular system, eyes, and skin. So that's on page 75 of the book, The Big Bamboozle. So that's where you need to go for that information.
Well, I think what's interesting about that as well is that, you know, bin Laden has been reported immediately after 9/11. Not only was his family flown out of the U.S., because there was no commercial flights allowed, his family was flown out. But then later, yes, he was actually attended to by American doctors and American military personnel while he was on dialysis. I don't know if it was Dubai. Regardless of that, most people, I think, should be aware of this also. Because I kind of want to speak to those people that might think, oh, you're just being crazy and all this, right, to bring these things up. Bin Laden was never officially charged by the FBI for 9/11. And if you research that, if you call, because there's offices, if you call the FBI, and it's listed on their pages and websites what he's been accused of, he's never been accused of having anything to do with 9/11, because there was not enough evidence to link him to it to begin with.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Never. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it was to the benefit of powers to be to keep him alive until Obama's ratings were slipping a bit, and so then they pull off this farce in Pakistan. And wasn't it strange that just a few weeks later, like 24 SEALs that were involved in that
were
shot down, or their helicopter crashed.
You could chalk that up as just random coincidence, right?
Yeah, I don't think
sure. However, also think about how interesting that is, that all the information that we have that bin Laden has been dead for many years, and he keeps getting younger and younger and younger in each video that's produced of him, which is interesting, and also that he's left-handed, but yet he's writing with his right hand in these fake videos. Take that, you know, how you will. But supposedly when we captured him and killed him, dumped his body in the ocean, so there's no...
Yeah. No DNA, no nothing.
That seems like
because we were trying to do the right thing by his religion. What the hell is that? They don't dump people in the ocean.
Yeah, us Americans are really
very
respecting other people's and countries' religions, especially if they're Arab.
Yeah, isn't that a joke? yeah, it was, and oh, I fought a lot of people over that Bin Laden thing, because oh, these ignoramuses were oh so happy, we got him. It's like, oh my God, I just want to, you know, shake you people till some sense comes into your brain. But yeah, you can't do that. So there you are. I don't know. When do you think we will actually get, or do you think we will actually get a real investigation here?
Well,
I don't think it'll ever happen. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yahoo actually announced earlier this week the fact that the UN, there was someone on the UN's team that was actually wanting to bring President Bush and the administration into some type of, you know, judgment. So
trial, right?
That's a breakthrough.
Wow.
That was a breakthrough. When I saw that, I was like, man, this is major news that's coming through Yahoo on their news. So this is a good sign that at least things are moving in some sort of direction where people are going to possibly hold these people accountable for their actions.
Wow. Yeah,
this would be over war crimes involving torture and the fact that probably they jumped the gun and went into countries that were not actually dealing with 9/11 possibly, but it didn't really state anything about 9/11 per se. This was just dealing about war crimes.
Well, that would be really interesting. I mean, I've heard people say, yeah, they should be tried for war crimes, but I've never heard any kind of an action. But you say this is someone in the UN was saying it.
Yes, it was coming from the UN. I'm looking for it right now. It's something that I posted earlier in the week on Facebook. I'm scrolling down right now to find the exact article where I can.
Well, whatever representative that was in the UN is being a little ballsy, okay, because...
Yeah, well, you know, who's not going to be back at the UN next session, right?
Exactly, and that's why one of the reasons why Palestine, that whole thing with even them having representation. The UN, I think people, when they hear that, think, oh, it's a wonderful organization, but the more research you do regarding itself, it's a power structure control sort of thing.
Well, somebody that one of my Facebook friends calls it the useless nations is what UN stands for, because, you know, they can't really do much as long as the United States controls it.
Well, the United States, what is the stake? I think it's like 25% or something. But I want to go back to when bringing up charges against like Bush and Cheney and so forth, or war crimes. I want to go kind of back to 9/11 with this. The people don't realize when they were, you know, brought up before on giving their testimony, it was behind closed doors. There were no transcriptions allowed. There were no notes allowed. There were no media allowed.
And they did not have to sign.
Yeah, not under oath. That should be a really red flag for people to think, okay, now why would that be?
Yeah. Why even have them there if they don't have to, you know, at least swear under oath that they're telling the truth? Why even pull them in?
No, but this was a request from them themselves. They would not, Bush and Cheney,
not
allowed to be interviewed individually. They made a deal.
Had to be together.
You're going to interview us. It has to be together and not under oath and no recordings, no transcripts.
And nobody knows what was said except the people who were there at the time. Yeah.
But move along.
That tells you something. I mean, there's so many signs around that this was lies.
Again, I want to go back to what Cynthia was talking about too. Like, you know, World Trade Center 7. People, please research them. It's the third building that fell.
Yeah.
And again,
the
reason this is important
is
because this affects our lives today. So, for anyone listening to this, everything from pricing markets and indexes, the way the economy works, a lot of it has to do with control that your government has that you might not be aware of, okay? So I'm not going to tangent too much, but it's important to be able to come to a conclusion within yourself to allow yourself to believe, okay, my government doesn't always love me no matter what. There are other agendas involved. And I think 9/11 is really a smoking gun to get to that understanding for people.
Yeah. Well, now, Building 7 was the one that, I believe it was a British woman newscaster, had talked about it falling.
Yeah, that was the BBC.
Right, the BBC, and you could see it. You know, it hadn't fallen yet.
Yeah, they reported 20 minutes before it fell.
Yeah.
There's actually more to that story. There were four separate national news stations that had footage where they actually reported that the building was going to fall or that it had already fallen as early as 20 minutes before it fell. The BBC and Fox News both reported that the building had fallen 20 minutes before the building actually fell. CNN and I believe it was MSNBC reported that the building is going to fall. So they all had a heads up that the building either had fallen or that it was going to fall. And how can four news stations piece that together when they probably don't really know? But then again, you also have Larry Silverstein, the owner of the World Trade Center, announcing, pull it. You know,
pull
and
it.
This is on his videos. If you Google Larry Silverstein, pull it, you can see the words coming right out of the horse's mouth on that one, you know?
Yeah, there were already demolitions.
Exactly.
I'm sorry
happened.
To interrupt you there, Cynthia. That's a great point. But I want to remind people, when we're talking about World Trade Center 7, that building that Larry Silverstein was a part of, and he recently had the insurance policy, I believe, 9 months before or 8 months before or something with 9/11, specifically for terrorist attacks, is that World Trade Center 7, again, I just want to remind folks, that was never actually hit by an airplane or anything.
Exactly.
That's the building we're talking about, and that's the building that was never mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report.
Right. It's 40-some stories high. And
it was 47 stories tall of structural steel, and it does not collapse in under 7 seconds without the help of some massive explosives.
Right, and we want to add that there's been skyscrapers before that have caught fire, and they did not fall.
Well, I can add to that. Do you know that in history there have been three structurally steel or steel-structured buildings that have fallen into their own footprint? Can you name them?
World Trade Center 1 and 2
and
building number 7.
And 7,
building
exactly.
7. That's it. That's it. Because fire does not cause the buildings to fall.
Neither does gas from a plane, because the plane fuel does not burn at a point where it would actually cause that type of damage.
No. Well, people talk about how it evaporates so fast and all, too. It just doesn't make sense. And you hear people who are not stupid people talking about, well, they heard, you know, the explosions, the pops all over before the building fell.
Yeah, if you go to the Toronto hearings and look up Graham, there's a guy named G-R-A-E-M-E. He actually speaks on this. I can't remember his last name per se, but if you look up his videos, he's very distinctive, and he actually talks about the explosive evidence with literally like over 12,000 reports that were consolidated in his report that he gives for about an hour. So he gives you the explosive evidence of all of these people's firsthand eyewitness reports of what they were talking about on the day of 9/11. And they did not corroborate. They did not all come together and say, hey, let's tell the story. They were all interviewed separately, so they were all telling their own story at different times. So it's a phenomenal presentation, and I believe he's a graduate of Harvard. He's very well-spoken. His speech is phenomenal. It's one of the best that I've heard also.
I've yet to see that, but what's interesting to me, too, is regardless of the accolades of him, but when you said he put like thousands of these things together, that's interesting to me. I need to look at that. Is also that even the first and the firefighters themselves, all the interviews of the firefighters saying, boom, 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 explosion in the lobby, explosion here, explosion there, and obvious molten metal, burning for weeks later, that kerosene or jet fuel or what have you would not create. So
wouldn't do.
Molten metal is the result of thermite and thermate. That's the only way that you can actually have that phenomena. And it was burning hot six weeks to, you know,
later.
3 months or so after the World Trade Center fell.
Mm-hmm. And remember all that garbage was shipped off to China?
To China, yeah. And then the beams
right
themselves
away?
Were cut in specific, lengths so they could be
mm-hmm.
shipped easier.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know who was in charge of that security company?
Marvin Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The younger brother of George W.
George. Who happened to be, I think it was, is it Stratus Tech? I forget the name, but the same security company that was in charge of Logan and JFK Airport at the time of the plane is taking off, which is probably just another coincidence.
Yeah. Just a coincidence.
And just a coincidence also that his babysitter happened to die in a mysterious death right outside his front door, you know?
Really? No, I did not.
Oh, no joke.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of dumb luck coincidences with 9/11, so I want people to research. It might possibly be more than coincidence. And I know it's difficult, and I'm not trying to... But I guess I want to get across it. It's not easy to go through.
I can understand that the people being in denial, because I was, but there's so much out there now. And once you, like, you've given people different places to Google to check things out, and once you start, it's like you can't stop because it's like, okay, this makes so much sense. And then you go on to something else. And so it's just an open mind. That's what we need. Just recognize that your government, like you said, doesn't always love you. That's a good place
to
begin.
And I think it comes down to a soulful level as well, where when you're not wanting to hear that information, when it's, because it is scary. Again, it's like mm-hmm. cognitive dissonance where it challenges you. It's like hearing mm-hmm. your entire life you've been religious and someone says,
right, or find out you're adopted.
Sense.
You know, you're 25 years old,
exactly.
and you find out that you're adopted, and that sort of messes people up sometimes. Yeah.
And hopefully, you know better, because when you look at it, you know, it's always there. You kind of know, and like what Cynthia was alluding to earlier, with your intuition.
Yeah.
You know there's something there. You know there's something wrong. You just don't want to either go there out of fear. But you will feel better soulfully, I promise everyone, if you go down that rabbit hole. And yes, it can be a little bit scary, but it's worth it.
Well,
it will also help you with when you see news information on your television and so forth, and like the wars that we're involved in, to be realistic of why they occur. And that's important because it can affect you and your children. So
you're going to understand what's happening in the world much better.
Speaking up for those that are adopted, keep in mind, Moses was adopted and I'm adopted. So, you know,
it's more than that.
I was told at age 2, you know, or whatever, that I was adopted. But I hear what you're saying. But anyway, going back to Graham McQueen on the Toronto hearings, if you go into Google and you Google the Toronto 9/11 hearings, the 10th anniversary of 9/11, you will see Graham, G-R-A-E-M-E, McQueen, M-A-C, capital Q-U-E-E-N, like the Queen of England,
okay.
Graham McQueen. He will give you a huge account of explosive evidence in the World Trade Centers on 9/11, as reported by eyewitnesses. So that is a must-see. If you've not seen that one, you need to really get that one open and just see it, because get that popcorn going and watch that thing from start to finish. It's really good. It's a really good video. Very good.
And throw some nutritional yeast in your popcorn. It's wonderful. My point with the adoption was because I've known people who felt that they had been betrayed and lied to when they found out. And so that's what I was meaning. It's like we feel that, I feel that I was lied to my whole life just being in the society.
Right.
And I'm not blaming my teachers or anything because they believed what they were teaching. But, you know, now at my age, I'm trying to learn history.
And, you know, in defense of our government, I know we keep tossing that around, and that's a big pill to swallow for a lot of people. So I tend to, you know, to speak in behalf of the terms that, you know, I love my country. I'm a true blue, all-American type person. I'm a true Texan. I grew up as a Texan, so I was brought up in the same state that George Bush was. But, you know, so anyway, I love my country, but the people that pulled this off are a faction, like a small group within the government. This is not the other true blue Americans that are working for our government. So we're not like trying to put an umbrella over this whole government thing saying our government did this to us. This is a very small group. And if you look at the PMAC information, Project for a New American Century, there is a handful of people that got together and contrived this whole thing. These were like heads of whatever. Their names are listed. Mm-hmm. They are known entities. So if you look this up, you'll see exactly who I'm talking about. But this is not your people who are fighting in the, you know, military. There's some really good people in the government. I'm not trying to put a bad name on the government.
Yeah, I was going to say
really
it's not
glad.
Like state governors, but being in Illinois, you know how our state governors are, so never mind that. Comparison, but right. I mean, it's not. But we have these secret branches and secret goings on, and our government needs to be more transparent.
I completely agree, and I'm glad that you both said that. I'm glad, Cynthia, you brought that up because, you know, some of the counters I will get with when I'm discussing 9/11 with people is, well, that's impossible because how could it be that all this could be pulled off? With no one coming forward. And so then you can get into arguments of, well, actually many have, and they've died, and they've been sequestered.
Yeah,
but
they need to Google the mysterious deaths of 9/11, and that will show you who spoke up about this and where they are now.
Exactly. But also that people don't realize something called the Manhattan Project, which was Fat Boy and Little whatever, which is Nagasaki and Hiroshima. People don't realize, okay, if you have the conception that something is impossible because not enough people could have been involved, I think people should realize to look at it a different way. It's something called compartmentalization, and it works. You have a construction crew come in, they do one job. Someone else comes in, they do another job. They are separate. They don't know what the other one's doing. So my point from that is the Manhattan Project, where we dropped the atomic bombs before, actually employed over 200,000 people. So you can look it up. It's all out there. So anyway, for people, for that argument of, well, 9/11 can't be, it has to be impossible that it's anything beyond the original story, because someone would come forward or too many people would be involved. There's much more to it. Just please
then
look at the facts.
You know, coming in with new technology also, what I was, you know, researching in my own radio show earlier was the fact that technology has reached a level where you can actually program people to do robotic gestures and to go into a Manchurian candidate phase where they're able to completely do a flip switch in somebody's head where they could actually do one operation and an alternate personality will know that they're, you know, exactly how to perform that task, but they can flip a switch in that person's head with some type of hypnosis or some type of psychotronic weapon type programming where that person will not even remember what the alternate person did. So they could actually commit murder. They could possibly go in and implant explosives and do a high-tech operation or a job, and their other personality will flip a switch and they will never even know what the other hand did. They'll never know that the other personality actually played out this role. So that's the scary
factor about what's
going on right now.
That's
people
scary.
Don't know that they're capable of this technology, but they are. This ties in with a number of things that I've researched this past 2.5 years. So it is true, and if you want to read more in depth on that, then go to Dr. Robert Duncan's book called Project Soulcatcher, and he is the architect of that technology. So I would highly recommend picking up his book, reading that book cover to cover. It's deep. It goes into stuff way, way, way over my head and most people's heads, but it will cue you in to exactly what they're capable of doing. And it may take reading it a couple of times to really get what they're saying, but this is information people really need to know. This is what they're doing with HARP technology up in Alaska and Tesla's technology. So the stuff is real. They're actually applying it. They're using it in military sciences and different applications. So this is true. It's a fact. It's not a conspiracy theory. This is real. So that's my take on that.
I'd like to add really quickly that everything Cynthia just mentioned might sound crazy to many people, but it's all documented.
Yes. Not only documented, but these hold U.S. patents way, way, way back. So this goes way back to like the MK Ultra zone in like the 1940s around World War II. So if you really want to research and get into that rabbit hole, go down that rabbit hole and see this whole thing. Look up the U.S. patents that are involved in that technology. It's all there.
Right. And I think once people realize that sort of, just considering that, they'll realize that, yes, there are evil people in the government that would kill 3,000 or 4,000 of their own citizens
for an
agenda.
That means,
kind of the point, you know.
Nothing, to them. Human life is not anything. It serves a purpose. You know, they want us as slaves, maybe, but killing a bunch of people.
Well, you've also got to look at the issue that was going on with the World Trade Center structure itself. That building was originally a project development of David Rockefeller. And then when they built the buildings, about half the building was constructed with asbestos. So they were going to look at doing $800,000 per floor to $1 million and, you know, two or something in order to transform that building through an asbestos abatement. So you've got that issue running where people may not know about this. They need to Google that. Google World Trade Center asbestos abatement, and you will actually see that building was going to have to be deconstructed one way or the other, and it was much more cost effective for them to just total this out and collect on the insurance than it ever would have been for them to have gone floor by floor and taken out all that asbestos. And I've talked with architects, very high-level professional architects and engineers on this weekly in my weekly meetings. So this was a topic of discussion that is coming up every week, basically. And they had to remove this regardless, and this was an easy way to do it in one fell swoop. 15 seconds, ba-bang, it's over with. It's down,
right.
It's done.
So,
it's,
I mean,
the dust
15,
is all
I
over
mean,
the city.
3,000 lives, that was nothing for them.
Nothing.
We only have 2 minutes left. I want to thank you both very much. You are full of knowledge. Cynthia Hamill at artsygirl.hubpages.com and Rick Wilson, Facebook, Scream the News, where he says, you know, post what you won't post other places, right?
I'd like to add one more, if I could, Rusen.
Okay.
Going back to Palestine earlier, there's another Facebook page that I'm an admin on.
Okay.
And it's a lot of Palestinians, Syrians, Pakistani people, so that for those of us that are just Americans, kind of get a different understanding that, you know, they're not all terrorists, so it's a very eclectic group.
Okay.
And that's called Equality, Diversity, Love. And
Equality, Diversity, Love?
Yes.
Okay. No, the terrorists seem to be us. I have a lot of friends from around the world, and I don't think any of them are terrorists. So, and they return the favor. They don't think I am either, even though they think my government or the government. But they
speak
well
for us Americans, I must say.
So, okay, that is Equality, I can't read my own writing, Diversity Love, a Facebook page. Okay.
Correct.
So thank you both, and I hope you'll come back.
Thank you, Ruth
Ann.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruth Ann. Thank you, Cynthia.
Alrighty.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, goodbye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.